Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the studios of KSFR and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'd like to introduce Valerie Martinez. She's a professor of English and creative writing at the College of Santa Fe and director of the Interdisciplinary Studies Department there. And Selena Cermeño, she is a psychologist, and she is the ambassadorial chair for United World College USA's Bartos Institute. Welcome, ladies, to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
And they will be taking part in an event on January 29th called The Tricultural Myth. That's Tuesday of next week. The Tricultural Myth, talking about race and class in Santa Fe. Let's start with that, the tricultural myth. I've lived here for a long time. Valerie, you've lived here for your whole life, I think. The tricultural myth seems to be something that people from outside of Santa Fe believe in more than we ourselves.
Well, I was born and raised here in Santa Fe, but I did leave after high school and have lived all over the place, including overseas, and came back in 2003. And my sort of perspective on that is, I think most people know, or a lot of people know, that the tricultural myth actually was the tricultural description of Santa Fe was a tourist strategy used in the early part of this century, some think even before that. I think you mentioned, Mary Charlotte, with the railroad, perhaps, to draw people to this area, and then after became a state. So it was a marketing tool for the most part. And
so they would say to people in St. Louis and Baltimore, come experience the tricultural harmony of the Spanish, the Indians, and the white people all getting along. And people would come out on the train and stay at La Fonda.
That's right. And I think we all know, those of us who live in Santa Fe, that it's much more complex than that. Probably it always has been. And so the myth has existed for a long time. Perhaps it functioned well as a marketing tool. But our city is much more diverse and layered, and the fabric of this community is much more interesting, I would say, than that.
What's your perspective on the tricultural myth, Selena?
Well, speaking as an immigrant, I am from El Salvador myself, and I would say that literally speaking, it is a myth, because there are Santa Fe's, it's, in my experience, is also a city that it's a home to people, to many foreign-born people as well, that do not necessarily classify under one of those three descriptors. Not Native American, not Anglo, not white Anglo-Saxon or white Anglo-Catholic, not of Hispanic descent. And so even though I am a Latina woman of Hispanic descent, I'm foreign-born, and I have friends who are born in many other countries who are active parts of this community, who clearly the tricultural myth label leaves them out from that perspective.
So what is the event going to be all about, the one that's at the forum next week on Tuesday? How did the two of you come together and make this thing happen? What is it? It's certainly, I mean, I love that it's called the Beyond the Lecture Series, because what you're doing is way beyond a lecture.
Well, I'll start with that. And luckily, the College of Santa Fe brought Selena on to our campus to do several things. You can talk about that, but to work with students, to work with faculty and staff. And we met that way. And Carol Carpenter, who is the sort of organizer and the director of the lecture series, a wonderful lecture series, brought us together because she thought, well, we'd be a natural match to sort of organize this event. And that's how it happened. And then Selena and I really spent a long time trying to figure out how to begin to approach this complex topic, how to really almost prepare the ground for dialogue rather than in any way to claim that in one session we can address the tricultural myth or the idea of talking about race and class. And, you know, this is, in my mind, the beginning of what we hope to be a series of events in which the idea of dialogue in Santa Fe about these issues can happen.
Yes, and talking about race, culture, class can be a difficult thing to do for many people, especially if people have experience with in their own personal history or their own present circumstances, if they have experienced some, you know, form of difficulty, discrimination, or any kind of negative experience as a result of race, class, culture. And so to presume that one can come into a 45-minute lecture or panel and just come ready to have a constructive conversation about these topics, I think it is to presume a lot. And Valerie and I decided early on that we wanted to harness this opportunity as a way of perhaps launching a process of dialogue.
So what are the, I mean, a lot of people have issues, baggage, and emotions about race and class everywhere on planet Earth, mm-hmm. and here in Santa Fe. What are, here in Santa Fe, the actual issues that come up that light people's fire?
I think that's mm-hmm. as deeply layered and as complex as the nature of our community. So I think it happens at every level, and I'm sure we've all heard in our sort of groups of friends in places where we're out in the city, we've either seen things that sort of spark the idea that there can be more communication or better communication between us. And I'll just speak very individually. What I noticed, I grew up in Santa Fe in the 60s and 70s, and what I usually say is that growing up in Santa Fe, everybody lived in all the neighborhoods, it seems to me, then they got along or they didn't get along. Coming back to live in Santa Fe in 2003, what I noticed, this again is a very personal view, is the city seems to me more geographically segregated, though it's hard to sort of, you know, we wouldn't be able to divide it by neighborhood, but it seems to me that we see that. We've also seen what I think is a wonderful thing, which are people coming into the city since that time from all different backgrounds, from different countries. That's, to me, makes the city a much richer place, a much more wonderful place. But it also, I think, necessitates talking about or thinking about how we can sort of create relations or connections with people who we don't know or we didn't used to know or we weren't used to be part of the city's fabric. So I see that. Those are just, again, personal observations. But I must say, I think we all hear in conversation people feeling frustrated about various things in Santa Fe or feeling that the city has changed.
Well, what are people frustrated about?
Well, I'll just talk about, you know, I come from the Hispanic community, as my family would call it in Santa Fe.
And your family's been here since the beginning of time.
Yes. My father's ancestors came to the New World in 1598. My mother's in 1630. And soon after that came north. And then, of course, left after the Pueblo Revolt and came back. And I think what I hear, a lot of times is that people say, well, I don't really ever go downtown anymore. I don't feel like downtown is a place like it used to be where most of the community gathered. It feels like that only tourists are there. Or I also hear comments about wealth and differences in economics here in Santa Fe. I've heard, sort of people talking about, I had a few weeks ago someone I was at a birthday party with, and somebody turned to me and said, to be honest, you're the only Hispanic person that I ever socialize with in Santa Fe. And she was saying that in a very genuine way, in a frustrated way, that why is that? Why is that that most of the people I associate in Santa Fe are only white and you're the only one? And so I think it bubbles up. The first thing I thought at that moment was, I don't think it always happens naturally. If you're lucky enough to live in a sort of mixed mestizo neighborhood in Santa Fe, maybe it happens more naturally, but for others it doesn't. And I think if that's fine with people, that's great. But if she was saying it with a sense of frustration, I wonder why that is. I wonder why that happens. And I think that, that I hear that a lot.
So go ahead.
I think it's also important to keep in mind that the issues that we're talking about here, race, class, culture, are really the issues of the world, of the rest of the world. And I think it's important not to look at Santa Fe in isolation, but to really also look at what we can learn from what other countries and other places that have had to, you know, that have come, whose society has come together through people who had been at odds with each other for whatever reasons of oppression or reasons of religion, that I think it's really important to look at how other countries, other places have also dealt with
this
issue.
So how have other places dealt with this issue in your experience?
Well, in my experience, I think the example that really comes to mind is South Africa. And I know that those have been different circumstances, but there's also been similarities there in terms of just the racial polarization that particular region of the world has suffered from. And I believe that this is South Africa is a country that has really done an exemplary job of learning from its history, learning from the past through its own Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which was headed by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. So I'm not at all saying that Santa Fe's circumstances are identical to that, but I am saying that clearly looking at the circumstances of Santa Fe as an immigrant, you know, I'm not from here. I've been here since 1994, that there has been a violent past here that hasn't necessarily been addressed or talked about.
Let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, it's no secret to anyone about the suffering of the Native Americans, for instance, and how this whole region came to be, and then how the arrival of white folks, and how, you know, the acquisition of land and the relocation, the resettlement of Native American groups to places that lacked natural resources that are necessary for life to be enjoyed in a fair and meaningful way, such as water, for instance. And so I'm not, you know, I want to be careful how I say all these things, because I don't consider myself an expert in this region, even though I've lived here. But in my professional path is one of being a facilitator of dialogue. So what I think I can contribute to the event is basically to talk about the how of engaging in this process of dialogue. And so in South Africa, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was established to help South Africans create a different society and move forward after so many years of apartheid. And I believe that there are elements of that Truth and Reconciliation Commission that the whole world can learn from. How do we learn from our history, for instance? And there are films about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa. There are books that clearly, you know, there are experiences in that process that we can all learn from.
I mean, it seems to me that Santa Fe, New Mexico, is a racial paradise compared to South Africa. We don't have the kind of polarization. We have tons of intermarriage. We have people mm-hmm. with two different surnames that are, you know, whatever, European, mm-hmm. You know, non-Spanish surnames. And, you know, there are not the kind of racial differences in the first place that you have in South Africa. What do we have here? I mean, I'm trying to put my finger on what the problem is.
Well, I would say that it has so much to do with history, how important history is in the present day, our ability to talk with one another, our inability to talk or associate with each other. Like many places in the world, this region, including Santa Fe, has a very, very complicated history, as you mm-hmm. refer to. And how we own that history and own all aspects of that history, how the legacy of that history presents itself to us in the way we relate to each other, I think, is very complex. I think there are many people who feel like you do in Santa Fe who think, well, this is wonderful. We have lots of intermarriage. People get along. And I think there would be a lot of people who feel like outsiders, who might feel alienated, who feel a history of oppression, who feel the legacy of injustice. I don't think that
Outsiders who feel alienated, it's not like South Africa where they're going to be violently excluded from, you know, work or places to live or whatever. And if they want to do something out of the norm, they're going to be literally killed or punished for it. We don't have that here.
Well, what I would say about that is that the history of Native Americans in this area is a history of that.
Yes.
And you know, some might feel that that was in the past and so that there is no legacy of that. And others would feel that, in fact, we see the legacy of any kind of system of oppression still alive and present.
Well, let's talk about that specifically. How do we see the legacy of oppression operating in 2008?
Well, I'm also a member of Little Globe. And Little Globe is an artist-run organization based here in Santa Fe that does large collaborative arts projects in communities. We're doing a project now called a Common Ground Project that is in Cuba, Ojo Encino, and Torreon, New Mexico. As we prepare to do this project, looking at the actual numbers, poverty levels, numbers of homes with or without plumbing and electricity, employment and unemployment. The rural areas around Cuba are about 80% Navajo. Cuba itself is the population is about 80% Latino, a very incredibly beautiful and rich area in history. But within New Mexico, areas of New Mexico, we have levels of poverty in that area, for example, in some of those rural areas that people would be shocked by, that I was shocked by. So I think that that's a complicated problem, but that part of it is based on the fact that these were areas where Native Americans were obviously predominantly their home and sacred lands, and with the acquisition of land and Spanish land grants and other things, economic things have happened there that are the legacy of that, and that's around us. And I think that the history affects the present day reality for many people in this state, whether it's Santa Fe or the environs. And I think that's just a truth. And I think that one of the things that's so interesting about this, and Mary Charlotte and I talked about this the other day, is because I teach college students, I'm constantly sort of reminded what young people feel like today. And I'm actually, it's encouraging. A lot of my students really will say, you know, I feel equal in every way, you know, my female and male students. I feel like I'm an equal citizen. And, you know, I don't understand the big deal about feminism, they'll always say to me as a feminist, or people who talk about racism, because I really feel equal. And I think that's a wonderful thing, especially that young people, perhaps here and in the world, feel that way. But what I say to my students oftentimes is, when you will go out into the world and you will experience firsthand the legacy of injustice. And the example that I use with them is, I'm so glad that you feel empowered. When you get out of here, you as a woman, if I'm talking to my female students, will go into a job where you have equal skills and qualifications as a man in that job. And still to this day, you will be paid 82 cents for the dollar that a man gets paid for that exact same job with those exact same skills. So I think that it's a wonderful thing that we're moving in the direction, I hope, of feeling that we have equal rights. But there are institutional injustices that still exist in our country. That's just one example. I think when we talk about economics and otherwise, and I don't think those are just absent at the city limits of Santa Fe. I think they exist here.
Yes, and if I may add, I think that, again, I would not for a second pretend to say that the circumstances of Santa Fe were identical to the circumstances of South Africa. But I do think that looking from a global perspective, that we cannot ignore what has happened in those regions it's sad, I believe, to also ignore what has been gained by those regions and how that can be transferred to our own city. But the other, you were talking about how is it, where do we see this form of, let's say, discrimination or apartheid themes within our region? And I, something I have observed, for instance, is that even though Santa Fe seems to be a very immigrant-friendly community, I have also heard really derogatory comments from local Santa Fe Hispanics towards their own Mexican or Central American brothers and sisters. These are people who are racially, ethnically the same. These are people who's by virtue of luck are born on the other side of the border. And yet I have been a witness to very derogatory comments and derogatory behavior from people who have been historically discriminated.
Where does that derogatory behavior and comments come from?
Well, I would say that a lot of that it's a phenomena that in anthropology and sociology, psychology, we call it internalized oppression, which oftentimes happens in groups that have been historically discriminated or oppressed. And then what happens is after a couple of generations, let's say these groups find ways of getting ahead, but they have done so without necessarily examining their own history, and their emphasis becomes to really survive and keep an eye towards the future, but in doing so, perhaps become blind to groups who have less power and less privilege than the power or privilege that they have, you know, that they find themselves benefiting from.
And there's a great irony in that, of course, because where we sit right now was Mexico. And so it's just very interesting, of course, that happens. It's a phenomenon, I think, of history and race relations that happens. That in fact, we are Mexican. Mm-hmm. Our ancestors are from here. As a Latina woman, as a Hispanic in New Mexico, I am mestizo. I mean, mm-hmm. I have some Navajo blood in my past as well. And so I think that's what's makes dialogue so important, is that none of this is easy. I mean, even as I'm speaking here, I'm sure mm-hmm. you feel this, Elena. It's sort of, I'm feeling like I want to be very careful about mm-hmm. how I articulate this. And I think what's important about the event is how do we begin to feel comfortable enough to articulate these things with others? How do we learn how to listen? I think that's, to me, very important. Listening to how people feel, whether we agree with how they feel about living in Santa Fe, either direction, if they feel like it's absolutely a perfect place and racially the most sort of developed place, I think that's wonderful. If others feel, you know, a lot of racism in this community, how do we all come together, listen to the way that we feel about living in this place, begin to prepare a way to speak about these things, but mostly learn from each other? And I think that's where we want to begin. How do we give models for ways to begin dialogue or even thinking about dialogue or the way that it can happen? And that's why this will be a very long process, it seems to me, and this is just the beginning. Yeah.
And we're talking about the Tricultural Myth Talking About Race and Class event on Tuesday, January 29th at the Forum at the College of Santa Fe at 7 o'clock. And we're talking right now to Valerie Martinez and Selena Cermeño. One of the things I think is worth talking about is people talk about cultural differences all the time. But then what do we mean by culture? And I've thought about this a great deal because none of my grandparents were born in the United States, and my mother wasn't born in the United States. And I think about how little I actually have in common with my Sicilian immigrant grandparents who, you know, have now long passed away. But I knew them growing up, didn't speak their language, and have far more in common with non-Italian Americans of my generation than I do with Italians or Sicilians who are my blood relatives a generation or two older.
I think that's a very important question. And oftentimes we think of culture as race or as ethnicity, instead of thinking of race and ethnicity as one factor that may or may not contribute to culture, and I think of culture as a host of factors who shaped our beliefs, which shape our behavior, and largely determine the identity that we create about ourselves. And for instance, I grew up in El Salvador with friends who were ethnically white, but culturally Salvadorian, you know, or culturally Latino. And so I think it's important that we don't, you know, that we appreciate the complexity that goes into culture and also the role that gender plays in it. And so that's one factor about culture that I want to keep in mind. But also the other piece about culture is that these days when we talk about culture, oftentimes we think of as gaining knowledge about another group. And in my field of work, we make a distinction between cultural awareness and cultural sensitivity, for instance. And we think of cultural awareness as knowledge about. And unfortunately, while I think it's necessary to learn about other groups, I think that education in this country oftentimes confuses cultural awareness with cultural sensitivity or with true or believes that if we teach students to learn about other groups, that is sufficient. And I believe that oftentimes we can do a lot more damage to people or further
damage. What do you mean specifically? Give me an example.
For instance, if you look at some textbooks, training textbooks, let's look at graduate school programs in social work or psychology, whatever, education. And so you might have a chapter on the Irish, and you might have a chapter on the people from Poland or Mexico or whatever country. And then so you learn that Irish people do this. You learn a little bit about their history. And that I'm not saying that's not important. But if that is what makes one a cross-cultural expert, I think it's limited.
Well, you have it, for example, in your own experience at United World College. You've got students from all over the place, all over the world. They come together. They're all the same age. They're very different cultures. What kind of actual cultural tensions or conflicts arise?
Well, I would say, well, first of all, there's plenty of it that arises, but and one of the beliefs of, for instance, a constructive engagement of conflict program that is the program that I'm involved with. One of the beliefs is that conflict is pretty much unavoidable if we spend long enough time with people, particularly people who are different from us. And oftentimes the conflicts that arise are from everything from, you know, interpersonal conflicts over space in my bedroom over it, to more of the more complex types of intractable type conflicts, such as historical conflicts over religion, over land, over resources, over beliefs about gender roles. And so the beauty of that environment is that youth are really encouraged to not fear conflict, but to look at it as an opportunity to grow in their own ethical growth as human beings, to grow in their understanding of diversity, to gain a comfort level with differences, and to learn from other groups, and to therefore challenge themselves and embark in this life journey of not only being citizens of a particular region of the world, but also becoming global citizens.
You bring up two things, I think, that are really important, or Mary Charlotte, you brought up the generational thing, which I think is really important. Sometimes as I talk about culture more and more, it gets more and more sort of vague for me, because when I think about culture, I think about generations. My experience of Hispanic, Latino, Mestizo culture, my own, is different in significant ways than the way my parents and my grandparents perceived it.
What are some of the differences?
Well, I always use the example of Oñate. If my grandmother's grandchildren present my grandmother with many of the things, uh, the the very bad things, violent things that Don Juan de Oñate did in the Southwest, it's very hard for her mm-hmm. to hear that. Mm-hmm. She wants us to have pride in our culture and for her to hear the things that Oñate did that are not the best things is painful for her. She has a harder time, I think, figuring out how to feel pride in one's culture and at the same time admit the horrors that happened because of the conquistadors in this area. Whereas my generation have been raised to a certain extent to be able to own or contain those a little bit better. It's still tough, I think. I think it's hard for a Latino person, mestizo person, to own a legacy of oppression, being the oppressor and also being oppressed. I think that's tough.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to move on to mm-hmm. the other thing that you said that's really important is you said the difference between cultural awareness and mm-hmm. cultural sensitivity. Just because we live in a diverse community in Santa Fe, because we're surrounded by it, we're aware of other cultures, and this is why we've been, you know, sort of educated about that in the history of Santa Fe, doesn't mean that we're very sensitive to the feelings and emotions mm-hmm. and sense of injustice of other people in this community. You know, sort of it's like proximity doesn't always mean understanding.
Yes, and what I mean by cultural sensitivity is that we develop a certain respect, comfort level, with people who are different from ourselves. That cultural sensitivity to me is something that emerges really out of relationship or out of friendship with another group. And I think there is a difference, again, between being a multicultural community and being a multicultural community where people actually have attachments to each other, where people feel a sense of curiosity, of thoughtful, caring curiosity about the circumstances of another group.
I think that it's important for me to talk about specifics because you can sort of talk about generalities. I mean, the example you gave, Valerie, of your grandmother, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And Oñate, that's important. It's important to talk about. But when you talk about the culture of your daily life, you don't really talk about Oñate every day. You don't really talk about, you know, the history of it. Culture, to me, is how you spend time, how you express emotion, how you live in your body, how you relate to others. What is your gender role? What is your sense of the priorities in life? And they're huge cultural differences from one group to another, even one family to another, but especially across groups. And where those things come into conflict is very interesting, and I think people don't always see it unless it's pointed out that there are cultural differences.
I think there are daily – I've heard people talk about daily encounters in this mm-hmm. city, and I can give you an example. This was a few years ago. I was in the process of moving, and I ran out of packing tape. And so it was, you know, midnight or late at night. And it happened to be that the day where there's no sales tax before school starts, where everybody gets free. And so I went to one of the big box stores late at night to get packing tape. And there were huge lines, you know, very late at night. So, and I'm going to be very frank here. So the cashier at the, you know, at the at the checkout was a Hispanic woman that I actually knew from a family here in Santa Fe, recognized her. She's at, you know, the checkout, and then there is she's finishing with someone, and then there's me. And then there is a Mexican family next to me who are buying their school supplies. And everybody is just haggard, exhausted from this day, and I'm standing there myself. I've been moving. And the cashier is trying to get everybody through, and the little boy next to me, and they're speaking Spanish next to me, so, you know, and the little boy turns to the cashier and says, "Rápida, rápida." And the cashier turns to me and says, you know, "I can't believe that he just said that to me." And this brought up for me a lot of things. When I was growing up here in Santa Fe, of course, we go to Mexico to Juarez sometimes. My mother and father used to always say that Mexicans were very liberal with their children, that they really were not as strict as they should be. I'm being very honest here. And this is what she was talking about in this line that the little boy had said, a little boy to an adult, in Spanish, hurry up, hurry up. And she was surprised by this. And meanwhile, after he said it, the family laughed. And I had what I tell my friends was kind of this cultural moment where I was standing there in the middle and I was realizing that just in me, all these kinds of associations were brought up. Her sort of shock and she was clearly not happy that this little boy had spoken to her that way. And it was just a moment. And you know, this wasn't a terrible moment necessarily, but it just pointed up to me how in daily life we do see how we're different in the ways that we communicate and don't communicate. And that's an example that I use that is very concrete. I have some others. And again, is this an example of racism? I don't know. It's an example of differences. It's an example of misunderstanding. It's an example of somebody trying to figure out, is that appropriate? Was that not appropriate? Or how does that work? Me sort of remembering what people had said to me growing up about another group of people.
And it's also a difference in your expectations of how you use your time. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people, when there's a line with a huge number of people in it, are going to work faster, and some people aren't going to work faster. And that may be a cultural difference. It may be how their individual person is.
Yes, and if I may add perhaps another twist to these examples of moments in which we see the cultural differences or cultural misunderstanding. And I see it oftentimes among educated, politically liberal, affluent friends or colleagues here in Santa Fe, where there tends to be a belief system, for instance, that we shouldn't shop at certain places, you know, that you should bring your bag, your cloth bag, and you shouldn't ask for plastic at the store, and what ends up happening is that oftentimes we forget that a lot of this whole liberal thinking, while it is important and it's necessary to keep our planet alive, to recycle, but oftentimes I think that we also forget how some of these same beliefs that we hold dear for the betterment of the world can also, you know, are also, there's a financial piece to be able to materialize a lot of these beliefs. To buy organic food costs more money. To shop in places that are more, you know, quaint and boutique-like and are locally owned costs more money a lot of times. And so if people, let's say, shop, I dare to, you know, to places like Walmart, for instance, or Kmart, oftentimes these are the places where we see the segregation, I believe, where we don't necessarily see the integration that we perhaps are presenting to the outside world as being a part of the city.
Well, also, I mean, there's a couple of things there. One of them is that sometimes people take an attitude about that stuff, a superior attitude. And that's just annoying, mm-hmm, and it doesn't get you anywhere. But the other thing is I've known people who could barely make ends meet who bought organic food because that was a commitment. So it's not always just about money. It's about what you know and what you hold to be important.
Yes, and I think it's a lot about education as well and about understanding how, you know, where your money goes and like you say, making a commitment. But again, you know, I think these are examples that I want to make sure that they're not stereotyped.
Right.
But that I think that, you know, talking more in terms of general trends, perhaps these are kinds of small examples where we see some of the, you know, where we sometimes kind of feel like we trip over each other a little bit.
And I must say, you know, I'm giving sort of daily examples, but it's not just a few times that I've heard people talk quite honestly about feeling racism in this community. So it's not even those.
Well, where does it come up?
I think it often comes up, you know, I mean, it'll come up in groups of friends, as I mentioned, at that party where this woman sort of said, you know, I don't really regularly socialize with any Latino person in this town but you.
Well, where's the racism in that?
Well, what she sort of felt like was, how can I be so separated from a large percentage of the community here in Santa Fe?
That's not racism. I mean, racism is when somebody either does or says something which is derogatory or if negatively affects another person of a different race.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I guess what I'm saying is that issues of race, because that clearly to me, or maybe it's economics as well, or either or both, those issues come up, I think, in conversation. Examples of racism, I think, we probably have numerous. The one that just happened a couple of months ago to me is that I have a someone that I know, a Latino person, and who said, you're trying to Jew me down to somebody else. And I stopped the conversation and said, excuse me? She wasn't talking to me. She was talking. And I said, excuse me? And she said, she was telling a story. So they were trying to Jew me down. And I said,
I don't even know what that means.
Well, it means that you're trying to be cheap, right? You're trying to get the price down. She wasn't even aware of that. And I said, do you know what that saying means? And she said, what saying? And I said, the phrase Jew me down. I said, the word Jew is in there. And she had no idea that that phrase might be very offensive to somebody. She just, it was almost like a generic phrase from her that perhaps she learned somewhere. And it was an uncomfortable moment for me because I thought I could let it pass. But part of me knew her well enough to say, whoa, you know, I mean, I'm just surprised that you used that phrase. And it was a great moment for dialogue. It was kind of a scary moment for me because I thought, you know, it's hard to talk about those things sometimes. But she had absolutely no idea that that phrase would be quite offensive to someone.
Yes, I would say that, again, we don't always examine our language. We don't always examine where a lot of sayings come from. And I think that those of us who've had to learn English as a second language, you know, perhaps kind of develop sort of more of a hyper ear for these terms. And so I think, you know, and talking, you know, what is racism? Talking about, there's dictionary definitions. Of course, there's textbook definitions. And I think that, you know, it's a very complex term because.
But where do you see it? Let's not talk about the semantics. Let's talk about where you see it in your life.
Where do I see it in my life? Okay, that's. It's an important question. And I think I personally, you know, I consider myself a very privileged person. I'm well educated. I have good work. I have a home that, you know, protects me from the elements.
Yeah.
And so I don't necessarily see it directed at me, perhaps. But I see it, I would say specifically right now, the example that comes to mind, I would say that I see it against immigrants and particularly undocumented immigrants. I think the term illegal alien, for instance, I find that offensive. I think it fails to take into account a human rights and a human dignity perspective. I believe that if we live in a place that considers itself to be a welcoming place, I think that we, in that welcoming aura that we want to present to the outside world, I think there's an implication there that we understand principles of human dignity and inclusion, and that we understand how those translate into how we behave towards others.
I know a lot of people in the immigrant community in Santa Fe and have for many years, and one of the things that I have noticed, I mean, I really do think that this is a much more welcoming place than a lot of other places in the world. I hear stories from my friends in New Jersey. A friend of mine in New Jersey married a Costa Rican man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'll have people call the police on them for no reason at all.
And I would agree with your statement. I do agree with that.
And the problems that we have here, I think, arise from the most basic national policy, which is, you know, someone will knock on your door and take you away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have these immigration raids in Santa Fe, and that is scary when it happens, and there's a culture of fear that happens because of that. And I think that's far more problematic than the, than the daily interactions with Santa Feans.
Well, I think that there's... I think, yes, by degree, it probably varies greatly. I think that every community should have the opportunity for places and forums where constructive dialogue can happen, no matter what the degree or instance, we think. I mean, so if immigrant issues in Santa Fe right now are the most extreme examples of that, maybe that's why dialogue is necessary. If, you know, so it, I don't think it matters. I think every community should have opportunities to have these kinds of conversation, the very conversation that we're having now, because I think that there's always a wonderful space in this community to grow and to change and to, I guess I hear enough sort of wanting to have more dialogue on various levels that it's important. But I would just say in general, isn't that important in every community, in particular in every beautifully diverse community?
Yeah, I think this whole issue of dialogue is really an invitation. It's a voluntary, you know, it's a voluntary decision that each one of us can make about whether or not we want to reach out to others whose history is different from ours or whose present circumstances are different. And I think, you know, we can't, like, say that this is for everybody.
So what we're talking about is the lecture/dialogue that's happening on Tuesday, the 29th of January at 7 o'clock at the Forum at the College of Santa Fe. And it's called The Tricultural Myth, Talking About Race and Class in Santa Fe. So the two of you will be there, Valerie Martinez and Selena Cermeño. And what will you be doing? How's the evening going to be?
Okay. Well, my role, I was approached to take part in this event as a facilitator of dialogue, and my role will be one of talking about my own experience in facilitating dialogue, talk about elements that are necessary to engage in dialogue, hopefully talk about the differences between dialogue and debate. I think oftentimes people confuse debate with dialogue, and that they're clearly not the same thing. I think that when we engage in dialogue, we seek to understand where another person is coming from. When we engage
in debate, you want to win.
You want to prove your point. And yeah. I think there's plenty of debate going around in the world these days. And I clearly I'm a firm believer in debate for certain circumstances. But this event is really more about learning from each other. And so I will be sharing principles of dialogue. I will be sharing a DVD of some of the students that I work with engaging in dialogue themselves. And so that will be my role, Valerie.
And also, in just to complement that, we also wanted to bring something that was closer to home. And mm-hmm. last year, from January to May, there was a very interesting project that happened in Santa Fe that resulted in the opera, our new opera called Memory Lines. There will be, from that very diverse ensemble of Santa Fe, a kind of demonstration of how creative dialogue can happen. And so that group will really kind of model just one way that dialogue happens that might be very unexpected or very out of the box for the audience, and that did happen here in Santa Fe.
Well, Valerie Martinez and Selena Cermeño, thank you so much for spending all this time with us.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz. Thank you.